Welcome to another edition of the Super Flight Podcast, your Crimmaster Cycle NBA podcast. And yes, I should be ashamed of myself for that one. I'm not even a big Matthew Barting guy. How's it going, folks? It is Friday night, January 6, 2017. 2017, can you believe it? And I am your host, as always, Joe Borelli. Welcome back, peeps. How's it going? I hope you enjoyed last week's podcast. I hope to have more good stuff for you this week. Doing one tonight, and I think I'm going to do another one tomorrow, and I'll release those back to back. Actually, I'm hopping on someone else's podcast tomorrow, but we'll talk about that later. So, welcome, friends. Let's talk. Let's talk about some stuff. What's going on in my life? What's going on in your life? That's what I want to know. Why don't you guys hit me up and say hi, man? Be like, what's up, Joe Borelli? How's it going? Yeah, if you want to do that, you can obviously get in touch with me. I think you know how, but if you don't, I'm going to tell you again right now anyway. You can contact me via Twitter, I think would be probably the best way. You can tweet at the show at SuperFlightPod. You can tweet at me personally at Joe Borelli on Twitter. You can email the show if you want. At Superflight, well, you can email the Superflight Podcast at gmail.com. There we go. And you can follow the show on the ABPN network, which is Almighty Baller Podcast Network. And you can follow I think you could just download it on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Google Play, and all that stuff. I think that's still all relevant. I'm still getting used to this switching over and not cursing thing. So, yeah, I'll have this all down pat hopefully in the next week or two. And then, like, you know, we'll all understand what I'm doing and how you can listen and how I can get to you. Because that's really what I'm trying to do. I'm just trying to get to you. I'm trying to sneak in your room at night and fill your ears with sound. Is that weird? Is that creepy? Sorry. I'm a little creepy sometimes. Anyway, so tonight, I'm going to talk to my good friend Damon Rangula again, and he's going to come on and we're going to talk about some young NBA talent who are seemingly taking the next step. So up-and-coming stars like Giannis Antetokounmpo and, Joel Embiid, because I love Joel Embiid, and Julius Randle. And, you know, anyways, we're going to talk about these guys. But I figured I might as well do my little spiel for you guys, right? I think you guys appreciate when I do my, you know, quick couple-minute diatribe at the beginning. So what are we going to talk about this week? Well, first, I just want to say that, again, and I'm really tired of talking about this and hearing about it, as is everyone in this country, and it's a real tragedy. My heart goes out to the people in Fort Lauderdale Airport and their families. I guess 5 people have been killed again tonight, and several other injured from a gunman. Yeah. All right. I'm not trying to take this down a negative road here. I'm going to go off of that path. But I just wanted to say that, like, you know, I'm really, as we all are, I really wish something could be done. But, you know, whatever. What am I going to do? But I do want to say that, you know, my heart truly, truly goes out to those families and the victims. And you're in my thoughts. What else? On a happy note, let's talk about a little bit of music. So here's my thing this week. I know I did this stupid Metallica review a couple weeks ago or months ago. I don't know. I was really excited about that album when it came out, and I listened to it, and it's been great. But if you guys have not heard the new Run the Jewels 3, oh my God, it is so good. Go get it. I know they've had it up on the internet for a bit for free. You can go to the Run the Jewels website and you can download that thing for free, man. It is so good. It's just, I mean, I'm not a music critic, right? And, like, typically I'm not a huge hip-hop guy either. I'm more of a metal guy, in case you guys couldn't tell. But this album is so good, man. They're like, the lyrics are definitely important to the times. They're very poignant. They're very, you know, they're also fun and funny at times. And I think they just, the thing for me that really attracts me is that when they rap, when they do their rhymes, man, their rhymes are like, they rap hard, they rap angry, and it's right up my alley. It's really exciting for me. I think it's such a good album. The one track, Stay Gold, so good. I was running to it, and it's like right in my tempo of my pace. So it's a great album to run to. And the beats are sick. They're like dark and moody. I mean, the beats I'm talking about, not just the lyrics here. Like the beats are like, they're dark. They're like, it's angry beats. It's really good stuff, man. It's, if you want to get jazzed up, if you want to get like amped about the world, amped about life, or if you want to, you know, like feel a little politically angry or something, this is just the perfect album for you. These guys are sort of old school hip hop, and they're also like very new school with the beats, and it's very versatile. The cadence of their rapping is amazing. Or should I say rapping? The cadence of the rhymes, the way they spit lyrics, if you will. They're great, man. You know, and the other thing is, like, I really appreciate that Killer Mike, you know, was on the Bernie Sanders, a campaign trail. There we go. He was on the Bernie Sanders campaign trail. So he was you can tell on the lyrics too, like he's a very politically active, person. And he speaks a lot in the lyrics about injustices in our country. And so it's not just like, also I love LP too. They're both great, but it's not just a matter of, it's like a lot of newer hip hop is just not great for me because it's all about like, I got money and hoes and all that stuff. I don't really care about that. I do want to hear you talk about what's real, you know, and what's important to you and what's important in life overall in general. And I think speaking out about injustice, I'm not like a hugely political person, and I'm sorry if I'm taking you down this path again, but I just want to say that like the album is really good. I'm not doing it justice because, again, I'm not a music critic. I make music and it's really bad. But I don't actually, criticize music. I guess I do. I guess I am a little bit of a music critic when I do this on an NBA podcast. So that album is great. I highly recommend it. Go get it. Again, it's still up for free for a little bit, I think. And, yeah, man, what else? So I was trying to, write down sort of script what I was going to say here, because this is, again, I kind of just go off the path. I kind of get everywhere and my thoughts are all scattered, especially when I'm having a really long week and I'm tired. And this week is no exception. But I didn't do it tonight. I just didn't have time. And my apologies for that. But let's, just hang in and be cool. And I'm going to talk to Damon and we're going to talk about some up-and-coming NBA players, and it's going to be good. It's going to be fun. And, so hang tight if you want to hear about that stuff, and then also some Lakers and Lakers pick and Sixers mixed in there. You should hang out, and we'll be right back. So welcome back to the show, my friend. How's it going?
Good, good. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, man, anytime. You know you're always welcome. You're one of my favorite guests on the podcast.
I appreciate it, Ben.
I'm just buttering you up because I like your pretty face. Hey, why don't you plug your stuff? You're writing now for 16 Wins a Ring, right?
Yes, so I'm writing for 16 Wins a Ring. I'm writing at Silver Screen and Roll for Laker Stuff. I hope to be increasing my writing output very shortly. Work has been a little bit crazy. But yeah, other than that, just follow me at Damanr, Damanr. And I plug my stuff all the time.
Cool. Do you still do Silver Screen and Roll stuff too? Did you
mention that? Yeah, I do. Okay. Yeah, I did. Yeah, I do. It's been a little slow.
Yeah, no, that's cool. I don't write at all, so... There you go. Nobody wants to see me write, man. It's not fun. It's not pretty. Just listen to my pretty voice. That's all you got to do. So anyway, welcome back. I did a little bit of an intro, and I thought we would talk about some of the up-and-coming, rising stars in the NBA.
Absolutely.
Yeah, guys who are, seemingly taking that next step. And the first
It's funny that you say that, as we're talking – Kristaps Porzingis and Giannis Antetokounmpo are playing each other, which is perfect.
Yeah, I saw somebody put a Twitter feed what did it say? The unicorn versus the alien, and Kristaps did a spin move and then banked it off. He totally faked up Giannis and did a bank shot and made it. It was pretty crazy. Sadly, only one of those guys are on the list, but we can definitely talk about Porzingis too. It's just that, like,
of
I don't
course,
know.
Yeah.
I don't know if you can really consider him an up and coming star, because I think he's already, like, I think his star has already risen. He's getting better, obviously, but
yeah, and he had, I think with a lot of these guys, it's like, okay, either it's the steady growth. So you see somebody like Giannis, who he's taken an incredible leap this year, but there were still portions of it that we saw last year. It's just it's exploded. Like, we might have seen this Giannis, maybe I would have expected, like, maybe one season of it 4 years from now.
Mm-hmm.
He's just doing it now. But somebody like Porzingis is like, it hit us out of nowhere, because when he came, first of all, he was drafted, and we were like, wait, who? They Knicks really took him at
See,
that
wait a minute. Let me
stage.
Stop you right there. You were like, who? I was like, Sam Hinkie's the only guy in the league that was scouting this dude. And somehow he didn't take him. But yeah.
Well,
yeah.
It's okay. Jahlil Okafor's working out. What's your problem?
Yeah. You want him? Please take him. Oh, anyway, you know what? Let's. I was going to start with Isaiah Thomas, and I just watched the Sixers game, but you know what? We're already talking about Giannis. Let's talk about Giannis. So let me give you some numbers for you. Like, right, as you were just mentioning, he, like, last year and the year before, we saw some glimpses of what everyone thought he could be. Like, he's super athletic, he's super long, and he has really good court vision. And we're like, wow, man, once in a while he'll show you a flash. You're like, that dude could develop into, and what was he taking? He was like a late first round pick, I think.
13th or 14th, yeah.
Okay, so mid first round pick. But you know, and I think when the Bucks.
Oh, and he was absolutely a reach at that spot. I mean, for sure.
That's what I was just going to say too. And when the Bucks took him, everyone was like, oh, that was kind of a reach, but that kid could pan out.
Yeah.
Man, has he panned out. So here's his stats so far this season. He's averaging 23.9 points a game, 5.9 assists, which is crazy for a dude who's almost 7 foot, 9.1 rebounds, which is also crazy for a guy who sometimes plays the point position. And by the way, he's like, if you want to talk about a hybrid basketball player, he is the epitome of that. What else? He's got 2 blocks a game, which I think right now is 5th in the league.
And it's insane.
It's insane. And his PER is 35.3. No, I'm sorry, 28.8 on 35 minutes a game. He has
the, for his age, somebody posted this, I forget who, for his age, he's had the highest PER, period. Wow. Shaq wasn't that high. He was close. Jordan wasn't that high. I don't even, you know, it's just for his age, he's 22
years old.
And this year, given all the craziness, all the, you know, talent in this league, you see what James Harden is doing. You see what Russell Westbrook's doing. LeBron is LeBron. He has been a top five player at 22 years old, a top five player in the NBA, not top five player in the East, not top five young player, not top five up and rising star, top five player.
And
it's amazing.
It's amazing. But the weird thing is, like, it sort of also came out of nowhere. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. So I liked Giannis's game. I liked his game because his type of, like, the type of player that he is, it's like LeBron, right? Like a big guy who just, he controls the floor, both sides.
Right.
Defense, offense. He's the playmaker. He's the guy who can, you know, get to the lane anytime he wants. Like, that kind of player. So that's, like, my favorite kind of player.
Mm-hmm.
And so I always had an affinity for him. But at saying that, I always thought, you know, Milwaukee just needs one more star. They need a superstar. They need a real superstar to, you know, to really call themselves a successful organization in their rebuild. They have him. That's him. I never thought it was going to be that. I mean, at best, I really thought that this is the kind of year he could put as, like, the 1 year kind of pinnacle. But if he's doing it this early, and if he continues doing this, just forget improvement, which I think he'll still improve. I think he'll still improve his jump shot.
Well, yeah.
If he does what he's doing now for the next 5-6 years, he's a superstar.
Yeah. Well, and speaking of, like, I was going to mention one thing that he could improve on is actually his 3-point shooting, because I think it's pretty atrocious at this point. Right. I think he's shooting like 22% on not many threes, but yeah. But imagine, man, again, as you just said, he is only 22 years old. Only 22 years old and he's doing this.
And Bucks fans will remind me, he's 22, but he also hasn't been playing basketball that long.
No.
Like, you know, some people start really young. He started relatively late, so he's only been playing, like, organized basketball for, like, 7 years, which is nothing.
Yeah, yeah. And he's Greek. I don't know what that has to do with anything, but it's sort of endearing for some reason. I don't know. He's Greek.
and every time you hear him talk, it's just like he seems like such a good kid, such a mature kid already.
Yeah. So Giannis, and the thing is, like, he's definitely going to be named to the All-Star. I'm going to do a podcast with a friend tomorrow. We're going to talk about All-Star, what we think.
He better. How crazy would it be for him to go from not in the All-Star game at all to starting? I hope he starts. That'd be so awesome.
That would be amazing. That would be amazing. Yeah, not even, like, nobody was even considering him last year as an All-Star. We're like, oh, it's going to be another 3-4 years. Maybe he'll put it together, you know.
Oh, and you know what? Oh, and again, just to highlight how crazy his rise has been, I would have accepted your premise, like somebody's premise of saying, okay, Giannis is going to be a really good player. He's not going to make the All-Star team because he's not going to be good enough offensively, but he's going to be, you know, a pillar for a team. I would have totally accepted that and said, you know what, that makes sense.
Yeah.
But again, this is just another level.
It's a totally another level. You know, and not to get off on a tangent or anything, I mean, they started out the season when I think they were going to run him at the point, or they ended last year running him at the point. And
yes.
I guess that
yes.
probably helped his growth right there, just like understanding the court a little bit better. And he's still doing some of that this season. When they said that they were going to move him at the point permanently, well, I thought that was going to be like that was going to be his permanent position. I thought it was a little crazy, but that would have been amazing. And he still does it on occasion. So anyway, I'm a little bit all over the place. My thinking was that how much of this do you think has to do with Jason Kidd as a coach? I mean, I hate to give Jason Kidd credit, but the kid has developed so quickly and that team's actually starting to come together. I don't want to give him credit, but...
I you know, it's weird because I kind of had the same thought. Sometimes I'm like, it's how much of the development of these players do we credit coaching, and how much do we just credit their own ability to, you know, work hard and study film and that. But the truth is it's always somewhere in the middle, right?
Right.
And what Giannis has done is I still tend to credit players more than anybody else, just because I can give you the best instruction, but you also have to be willing to take it and apply what I'm saying to you to reach the next level. At the same time, it was Jason Kidd's foresight to say, you know what, like you're saying, last year, it's going to be bumpy to start. There's going to be a lot of turnovers, but you know what, Giannis, you're the point guard. You're running the team. You have to make sure everybody's happy. You have to make sure the right people are getting the ball. You have to make sure that, you know, the right cuts are being made and et cetera, all right. That goes into running an offense. And it was his foresight to say, no, we're sticking to it, because the biggest thing I think that separates a coach that's good with developing talent versus not is allowing players to make mistakes and allowing them to stretch their comfort zone. So last year, you know, the Lakers, we had Byron Scott, right? So what was the biggest dig against Byron Scott?
He sucked.
That, you know, well, yeah, other than he just being one of the worst coaches ever.
Worst coaches of all time, yeah.
It was that he kind of said that, okay, you're a young player. This is your lane. If you step out of this lane, you're getting benched, right? And the truth is, a lot of coaches do that. And Jason Kidd, to his credit, and kind of, you know, the knock against him, and he was with the Nets, you know, they were win now and all that. He has allowed that process to take place. And similarly, he let Jabari slowly come into it. He let Jabari make mistakes. He let Jabari go 4-for-20 on occasion, and he didn't ever slow him down. And Jabari is taking a similar step to Giannis. If Jabari was on another team, because Giannis is overshadowing him, we would also be looking at Jabari Parker.
Right, exactly.
As, yeah, somebody like, whoa, this kid too. I mean, this Jabari Parker, I think, was top 10 in votes as well for the Bucks. And you know what? That's not unfounded. I mean, he has been so good, and he's also really young. So at the I can't speak much to tactics or X's and O's, because I'm honestly, that's like not my strength in terms of evaluating the game.
Right.
But what I can say is, from the standpoint of letting his young players make mistakes, letting them spread their wings a little bit, letting them be comfortable. It's not only letting somebody make mistakes, but also letting them be comfortable making mistakes. He has nailed that. And Jason Kidd gets credit for that.
For sure. And we always thought that, like, I mean, you can see the guy is clearly one of the smartest point guards to ever play the game, which you would think would translate, right? And it obviously has. I think my thing against Jason Kidd is always that, like, isn't he a wife beater and a drunk?
Right.
But whatever. Right. I mean, that's just a that's a character indictment, not his ability as a coach. But listen, let's move on. We're talking about the up and coming stars of the league, not coaches who we think are horrible people. But let's talk about Porzingis. I didn't have him on the list, and I think people have talked about Porzingis to death. But since he is playing Giannis right now, and we're both missing it to be doing this podcast.
I know. Sorry,
buddy. This is the only time I can do this.
I'm a horrible
human being right now.
I think we both just got home too, so we get passes for this one.
Yeah, fair. I'm with you on that. Yeah, let's talk about Porzingis a little bit real quick. Like, I had a thought earlier. He was out a game or two games or three games, and I'm not sure how many games he was out. Do you know?
No, I don't. I don't know, but I know, yeah, he was out for a stretch. Like, he didn't play the last Milwaukee game, and that was, like, 2 games ago. So, yeah, he was out a few games.
Okay. So my thinking today, I'm just walking the launch, thinking about the unicorn, and I'm thinking, well, you know, he's a really good player. He's going to probably make the All-Star. What's the thing that would keep him, or what's the biggest thing for him getting in the All-Star game? I'm like, the fact that his team has gone 0-5 since he's been out, by his not playing, is he's so good that his not playing is a...
I have a fun hypothetical for you.
Go ahead.
So the voting results came out for, you know, like the All-Star we're talking about.
Right.
So Carmelo Anthony was just slightly above Kristaps Porzingis. That makes sense. You know, Carmelo Anthony's like a, you know, household name basically at this point.
He's got star power.
Right. So, but he's not going to get in as a starter based off fan vote only. So it's going to come down to the coaches. Mm-hmm. Now, if for that last spot in the Eastern Conference, if it comes down to Carmelo versus Kristaps Porzingis and the coaches choose Porzingis, how poorly will Carmelo Anthony take that? He didn't like Linsanity because Jeremy Lin was getting, you know, overshadowing Carmelo Anthony. I think he's wanted to stay in New York because, you know, he wants to make sure that he's in a big market and all that.
Yeah.
I really, really want it to happen just because I like to see things burn.
Yeah, you and me both. That's a really good hypothetical, man. I think that here's the thing. I don't think just because of who he is, I don't think they would actually do that to him.
I know. And there's a
but if it would happen, but if it would happen, I mean, Porzingis is totally deserving of it. He's leading the team in. Is he leading in points? No. I think Carmelo still.
I think
he's leading in everything else. Like, the offense runs around him, and he's so good at defense. And I was going to say this about Melo. I would feel bad for him because for a long time I did not like him as a player because I felt like he was, like, when he was in Denver, I was like, this dude is a black hole. You pass him the ball and it disappears. And even when he got to New York, I was like, he's just a selfish player. Even if he was a really good player, I just didn't like his game and I didn't like his attitude on the court, right? But at the same time, he's kind of morphing himself into more of a public, a positive public figure socially. And I really respect that. So he's kind of brought me around a little bit.
He really put himself out there. And, you know, truthfully, so I think going to where you're possibly headed with this. So there's the angle of Porzingis is being held back by his teammates, mm-hmm. right? I actually think Carmelo has been a willing passer and enabler of Porzingis. Now, could he do more? Sure, but that's not really in his DNA to do. He's not, you know, he's not going to be LeBron James type passer, right?
Right.
That's just not who he is. I actually think Derrick Rose has been more detrimental, even though Derrick Rose's numbers are okay. They're not terrible. Like, Derrick Rose is performing better than I expected.
Yeah.
But I think just possession to possession, it's more detrimental to have Rose and Melo playing alongside Porzingis versus just one of Rose or Melo playing next to Porzingis. And, you know, going back to the original trade for Derrick Rose, the reason it still is not a terrible trade is because Derrick Rose is only on a 1-year deal.
Right.
So either this could have worked out amazingly or it could have been, you know, not so great. And I think it's going to fall somewhere under not so great in terms of the fit. And based on that, if they move on from Derrick Rose and they bring in, or they just, you know, elevate somebody like I think Justin Holliday's he plays relatively well for the Knicks. Mm-hmm. Somebody like that who's not going to monopolize possessions but try to keep the ball distributing and play defense. Look, we expect players to make leaps, and I think a player like Karl Anthony Towns this year is proof that all growth is not linear,
right,
or exponential, right? Like, right. So Giannis had exponential growth this year, but if you look at the last few years, you might not have been able to chart that he would have gone from point where he was last year to point this year. So similarly, Karl Anthony Towns, who's amazing, he's still putting up really good numbers. Oh, yeah.
And he's still the best player on his team, too, probably. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Right. Absolutely. So, but my point is like, just saying that, okay, let's say Porzingis would have had an incredible amount of touches in this offense, he would be that much better. That might not be the case. And I think it's all is not lost on that front. Porzingis is learning other skills. He might be getting frustrated playing next to Melo and Rose sometimes and some possessions. Obviously, like, it's so, sometimes it's so clear that just get the ball to Porzingis. Like, he is a, you know, mismatch. Just get him the ball. But he's still only a year two player. A lot of times year one and two players don't even really play. So he's kind of they've done a decent job of getting him involved. But yeah, I think long term they need to just make sure he keeps working on his skills, keeps working on his body. And you know, Joakim Noah is another problem, right? Porzingis probably should center long term, but so there are structural issues here, but there's still some hope, I feel like.
Yeah. I think once they get, you know, once they let Derrick Rose go, because I think your point was that like Derrick Rose and Carmelo Anthony are both me first players. Yeah, they need to be focusing on Porzingis more, you know, more. He needs to get the ball more, and then they need to run the offense through him because he can do everything on the court. He can hit threes. Yeah. He can drive to the basket. He can give you putbacks. Yeah. He's just, he's a unicorn. Listen, let's move on because we're spending too much time on the Knicks, and we gotta
go.
We gotta go. All right. let's talk about, you know, the funny thing is too, all of the guys except for one that I'm about to talk to you with are big men. Like all the big men are just like making these crazy jumps this year.
To anybody who says big men aren't important, all the people we're talking about and even more are proof that yes, big men are still so important. It's just maybe not in the traditional post-up kind of way.
Right. And I did a podcast earlier in the year I may have even been with you.
I think it was with you. Yeah, we did it. Yeah, that was us.
All right. So we just like talking about big men. How tall are you? Because I'm very short. I feel like I should talk
I'm
about
I'm super short too, so it's envy.
There you go. That's what it is. Exactly.
I'm like 5'9", basically. 5'9", 5'10".
Yeah, I'm 5'9". You're probably a half inch taller than me. Maybe an inch. Maybe a full inch. Yeah. Anyway, let's talk about Nikola Jokic.
Yes.
That kid has...
I love this guy.
Oh, my God. He's come out of nowhere, too. So they started out the season with Nurkic running center and then Jokic as the four. They tried the Twin Towers thing. There's one thing that's like has not been working for any team this year. The Sixers tried it.
No.
Denver tried it. It's not really working. There's too many.
I have a point about your Sixers when we get.
We'll get there. We'll get there. Hold on to it. I'm very eager to hear it. But so then I guess Nurk lost his confidence. He had some really bad games, and I've always really been a big fan of him too. He kind of had a huge season last year, and we thought he was going to take a giant leap. But then this year, Nikola Jokic, man, he sort of came out of nowhere. They started starting him at center, and he's been putting up – his numbers aren't crazy, so let me give you this. Like 13.1 points, 7.8 rebounds, but on 58% shooting
from the field. And his numbers since being in the starting lineup are really good, especially assists-wise.
Yeah, yeah. And he's a – what's his assists at? I don't even think I have it. I think he's probably just averaging like 2 assists per game, but for a big man, that's not bad.
Thing is about Denver, I love so many of their players, but there's just not enough minutes to go around to kind of let everybody kind of flourish. The truth is, out of all their players, Jokic is the best. And the problem is that's very unexpected. And any minutes that go to Nurkic versus Jokic are hurting the team, even though Nurkic is not bad. And the thing is, Nurkic in his mind feels like he should be a starter.
Right.
And he's very publicly said that since the switch for Jokic to be in the starting lineup. But the truth is the Nuggets are the best when Jokic is starting.
For sure.
And in fact, he probably should have been starting even before, but I'm sure they had to kind of manage. So you're juggling a player like Nurkic, Jokic, Then you have somebody like Kenneth Faried who wants more minutes, because Kenneth Faried is like, he's in this weird place where he started off as such a phenomenon that we probably overrated him, and his climb back to regression, we are now underrating him, because right. now we're looking at him like he's some kind of scrub, but the kind of energy he provides and the kind of, you know, consistent like offensive rebounding, putbacks, all that stuff, those are skills that are still very valuable. But because he's not that guy that we saw, you know, when he had the 1-2 season breakout in the, we devalue him. So they have a lot of players. They also have Danilo Gallinari, who should be playing the four. And just, they have a very, very deep group of guys that are ripe for, like, you know, a consolidation type trade where if some kind of star or difference maker becomes available, just package two or three of those players and just start to fix your rotations. But I love Jokic so much, because a passing big man is like probably, other than like the LeBron type player and Giannis, a passing big man like Jokic, like your boy Embiid, like guys like that who can play make while being that big, I love it so much it opens up so much of the floor, it opens so much up of the everything. Offense. It's so fun.
You know, he's also he's also shooting a pretty decent clip from three. I don't really know what it is.
Right.
Yeah. I think it's 33% from three. For a big guy, yeah. that's
which
huge.
Which is great. That's your target. 33% yeah. is perfect.
Listen, I watched them play so the Sixers and the Nuggets play the other night, and the Sixers won, and I don't really worry much about centers playing Joel Embiid. He pretty much eats all their lunches. But when Jokic was on the court, I was like, oh man, it's not good. Like, he's yeah. taking it to Embiid, and that's kind of like really impressive.
That's always a good way to like figure out what kind of players are good or bad, when you start evaluating how the opposing fan bases feel about them. And yes, Jokic is one of those guys where if you're playing against Denver, you want Jokic on the bench as much as possible.
Exactly. Yeah. Which just speaks to how talented this kid is. Also, I think he was another one that was drafted really, really late. Wasn't he like
the,
what was he the? Well, I know that Isaiah Thomas was the last pick of the second round. We're going to talk about him shortly. It's incredible. But Nikola Jokic, I think, was actually drafted in the second round. I'm not sure.
41st pick.
Really?
Yeah. Whoa. Second round, 41st pick.
Wow. That's insane. And here he is. Like, I don't think he's going to make the All-Star this year, but if he keeps on this trajectory, man, like, the sky's the limit for this kid.
I'm looking through this draft. This is amazing. Oh, yeah. I remember I looked this up a few days ago. In the same draft, 25 picks earlier, Nurkic.
Yeah.
Well, he drafted both of them the same year.
Yeah. Well, Nurkic is still really good. I think he just had his confidence shaken for whatever reason. And I could definitely see some suitors for him if they want to move him. And he would be good on another team. He might just...
Yeah.
You know, he might just need a change of pace and change of scenery or something. But I don't think his career is done at all. I think he's still going to have a really good career.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it's just about finding the right situation. And honestly, if Jokic wasn't as good, Nurkic would be a perfectly good center.
It just seems that Denver was scratching the wrong itch.
Yeah.
How
dare you.
I've been sitting on that one all day. It's like, oh, I got one. Me and my dad jokes. all right, let's move on. Let's talk about who do we want to talk about next? All right, let's talk about Isaiah Thomas, right? I just watched him, and like, he didn't have the greatest night against the Sixers, but he still kills them. That kid is so quick. He's like a little bowling ball too. He's strong. He's really quick. And how tall is he? I think he's like our height.
Yeah, I think he's our height.
It's crazy, man. I mean, he's like, God, he could bend me in half. But yeah, he's he's so fast. And here's his stats. He's averaging 27.8 points per game, which I think is fifth in the league right now. 6.4 assists, 2.5 rebounds, which for a guy that small, it's impressive that he gets any.
Right.
36% from three. And he's got... His usage is 27.1 on 33 minutes a game.
Yeah.
So he's basically their whole offense.
Oh yeah, I you know, it's so interesting. So I'm a Lakers fan, so obviously everything about the Celtics, you know, take it with a grain of salt. I still see the same flaws with the Celtics in the sense that they're always going to be the most well-prepared team, right? Mm-hmm. Because Brad Stevens is an amazing coach. They're going to run a very structurally sound offense. I think Al Horford has been good for them.
Yeah.
I wouldn't classify it as they're missing kind of superstar that they needed, but he's been good. They're defensively haven't been great, but I think that, you know, with the chemistry that they develop throughout the rest of the year, I think they'll be fine. The thing is, Isaiah Thomas has having an amazing year. And, you know, that he had a crazy outburst, you know, was it 52 points, 52 right?
52 points, yeah. Followed the next game with, like, his career assists in 15,
right,
which isn't
right.
that great.
No, he's playing at a really, really high level. The thing is, the physical limitations of Isaiah Thomas at 5'9", those come into light when a playoff team can lock in game plan against that in a 7-game series. And until it's proven otherwise, I think the Celtics will always be constrained by that fact that if their best offensive player continues to be Isaiah Thomas, their ceiling is quite low.
Literally.
They look bad. Yeah. Yeah, literally. I didn't even mean to do that.
Yeah.
But their ceiling isn't anything other than, you know, I don't even know how they win a playoff round, because if they're like a 3 seed and they're playing the Bucks or yeah. something like that, or
they're,
you know,
up against all
know.
That length and all that height. Yeah.
Right.
You're immediately at a disadvantage.
And you can game plan against that. Mm-hmm. And we've seen it time after time after time that the playoffs are a different game. And most of the reason why they're a different game is because in an 82-game season, there's back-to-backs, 3 games in 5 nights, you know, 5 games in 8 nights, like craziness like that. You can only do so much with the game plan. But when you have one team, one matchup, one main guy who you need to game plan against, it is much more likely.
And you get to
you'll be able to succeed.
Exactly. And, like, you know, I could see them winning a few games because Brad Stevens is a really good coach and he can game plan
for sure.
like with the best of them. But when you're playing it's the same team every time for, like, potentially 7 games in a row, you become intimately familiar with everything they're scheming, with all their player personnel and what they're going to do. And if they scheme to take away Isaiah Thomas because of his height, and you can do that, because, like, or even give him mismatches because he's not going to guard LeBron. He's just too small.
Yeah.
You can shoot right over him. You know, there's not much they can do to combat that. The reason we're talking about Isaiah Thomas is twofold. First, he's taken a huge step this year. Even from last year, he was really good. But the step, the difference in points he's putting up this year between this year and last year, and just the impact he's having on the game, he's taken a giant leap. I think he's definitely going to be an all-star.
I agree with that. And the Celtics are, like, they're probably at worst going to finish as a 3 seed in the East.
Mm-hmm.
They deserve at least one all-star. And if there's going to be one all-star, you go with Isaiah.
Right. And the second reason we're talking about it is because I know you don't like the Celtics. So I just wanted to get you.
How dare you?
I just wanted to get you talking about the Celtics. What do you mean, how dare I? Everything you tweet is, it's like anti-Celtic stuff.
It's my job.
Yeah, it's fair. It's fair. Hey, I'm not saying I mind it. I think it's hilarious. but I will say this about the Celtics, and I love that I was watching the game tonight, the Sixers and the Celtics, and I was watching the Sixers feed, and they kept showing, like, shots of Danny Ainge sitting on the sideline, and I'm like, yeah, dude, like, look what you're missing. Like, everybody gave him so much credit for building the right way, and, like, look what you got. The Sixers are going to be so much better in, like, a few years. Good luck.
You know, I'll get my Celtic shade in here. I think that Danny Ainge is a really, really good trading GM.
Trading GM,
but his
exactly.
draft record
has been awful.
His so bad,
so
and he
bad.
Doesn't get enough crap for it.
No, I was going to say the same thing. Does not get enough crap for it. Go ahead.
If he okay, the Lakers front office gets a ton of crap for the way they draft, right? They get a ton of crap of just how they are. Oh, Jim Buss, he's terrible. You know, the son of the owner. What does he know? They have such a good draft record. And for any rebuilding team or any team that's in that situation, drafting is the most important thing. And Danny Ainge has done a very, very poor job, in my opinion, of that.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally agree. I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, they've had every opportunity to take some really good picks, you know?
Yeah.
And he's missed over and over.
I think him every day, every time I see Julius Randle, because the Celtics could have taken Julius Randle, and instead they took Marcus Smart.
Yeah.
So I'm very happy about that.
All right. So speaking of, let's talk about your boy Julius. He's been didn't he have a triple-double the other night?
He did. So I think there's only, like, I think James Harden, Russell Westbrook, LeBron James, and Giannis maybe are the only other guys who had more than one triple-double this year. So that's pretty good company.
Yeah. Well, how many does he have on the year now? Two, three?
That is just two, yeah, two. That was the second.
Still, I know, and it's weird. Like, these counting stats don't actually mean anything. They're just this barometer that we go by for whatever reason. Like, oh, a triple-double. That means, for those of you who don't know and might just be tuning in, it's when you have double-digit points or double-digit whatever in three different categories. So, it's, you know, like, what was his triple-double the other night?
It was like, you know, 16, 15, 12, something like that, where it was just like kind of evenly distributed.
Yeah.
But I think what's interesting, and you mentioned that about, you know, we talked about Giannis and how the coaches let him make mistakes. I think Luke Walton has really empowered two players in particular, Brandon Ingram and Julius Randle, who didn't come into the league as playmakers of any kind of way.
Wait, hold on. Slow your roll there. Julius Randle, when he came into the league, he was known as like a ball handling four. He was a pretty big playmaker.
Really?
Yeah, come on.
Okay. So what I will say then, he was not utilized that way his first 2 years of his NBA career.
Okay, fair. That's fair. Well, his first year he sat out because he broke his leg or something. So.
Yeah. And then the next 2 years he's coached by Byron Scott.
So
the thing is,
so throw away the first 3 years of his career.
So basically it's he's pushing his players to be all around kind of playmaking, because I think long term, the way the young players are, like D'Angelo Russell is a hybrid. He's almost a scoring guard, right?
Right.
And as positions become less and less important, everybody we're discussing, all the big men we're discussing, are not traditional big men. They're not back to the basket. Hey, you, this is your role. Just rebound and score in the post, and that's it, right?
Right.
So as the positions become more fluid, developing those skills is so important for somebody to take the next step. And if it is true, and I don't follow college basketball, so I'm glad you do.
No, I don't either. I just remember him coming out, and I was like, I was really hyped on him. I liked him a lot. I just thought he was going to be a really good pro. But go ahead. I'm sorry.
So Julius Randle being a kind of playmaker in the sense that in what he's shown keeps him involved, because he's had issues with kind of checking out a little bit when he's not directly involved in the game plan.
Mm-hmm.
Keeping him involved, also developing that skill set, because it's very, very clear now that Julius Randle's ceiling will be achieved in a better way as long as he continues this path. He's kind of found what works. And the all-round, you know, just freak of nature, just in the open court, he's so fun to watch in the open court. I don't see people his size making the kind of moves he makes, the kind of spin moves, you know, hesitation dribbles, all that crazy stuff that guards do. He's capable of doing it. And long term, next to a guy like D'Angelo Russell and you know, the other pieces they have, that'll be so important. And I've been impressed. You know, if anybody can even go back and search my tweets, I found that Julius Randle, I was very, very down on him, and I was very wrong about that. I'm glad to be, as a Lakers fan, I'm glad to have been very wrong about being wrong about, you know, Julius Randle and his and what kind of pro he's gonna be.
Mm-hmm. I had a point and I totally lost it. Oh my God.
Sorry. I talk so much. I feel like, yeah.
It's okay, man. Go ahead. Go for it. Randle, no, he does. The one thing I was going to say about him is that, like, he's a little bit a black hole, too. I feel like he does get lost with the ball. You throw it into him and he's just.
No, and you know what? And I think pushing Luke Walton, pushing him to actually be an integral part of the playmaking.
Mm-hmm.
Is actually almost designed to get that out of his game, and it's worked. And it's worked because I felt the same way when Julius gets a ball. Okay, well, that's the end of the possession. He's gonna, you know, rush at the rim, and hopefully something good happens. But I think giving him more responsibility, again, expanding that comfort zone. The same thing we talked about Jason Kidd is expanding that comfort zone. Is it's working. And the same thing. It's like people questioned why is Luke Walton having Brandon Ingram bring up the ball in the second unit, and why is he, you know, forcing him to run pick and rolls? I think it's to say, hey, Brandon, you've never done this before. You've been on, you know, scorer. You at Duke, you came off curls constantly, and you know you made shots off the dribble and stuff like that.
Right.
No, you have to set some plays. You have to make the right decisions. You have to make the right reads. This is expanding his comfort zone, using this developmental year, using this, you know, kind of rebuilding year to develop those skills. And I think it's, you know, it's been working generally. The Lakers have fallen off a little bit, but I think they were always closer to being this level of a team than the team that they were right out of the gate.
Oh, for
and
sure.
So,
yeah.
I'm day to day, game to game, I'm sad when they lose, but big picture, I'm still happy with the direction everything is going.
You sound like a Sixers fan, my friend.
Yeah. Trust the process.
Trust the process. I don't know, I was going to ask you, though, what do you think his ceiling is, though? And, like, he's averaging 13.7 points, 8.7 rebounds, and that's good. That's solid numbers, but that's not, like, superstar numbers. It's not going to get you into the All-Star game. So do you think he has that potential? I mean, he's taken a leap this year, but how big is that leap?
So it's interesting, right? If you look at it from that context, I think everybody on this Lakers core, let's call the big three of the core, like just moving forward, is D'Angelo Russell, Julius Randle, and Brandon Ingram. I don't see the trajectory to any of them being a superstar. Right. I see for D'Angelo Russell, I see maybe two All-Star games. For Julius Randle, I see maybe two, three All-Star games. Brandon Ingram is a complete blank slate at this point. I don't even know where to go with that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see like that Giannis leap, or I don't see, you know, what Joel Embiid is doing right now, or Porzingis in New York. I don't see that yet, and that's okay. I mean, this is part of the process. They're probably going to be in a situation where they try to rebuild through free agency in the draft, and even with the new CBA, that'll make it free agency and trades. Even though the new CBA is going to make that a little bit more difficult for free agency, I think that's their path. I think that's still, I don't see the generational superstar on the Lakers right now.
Yeah. Okay. That's fair. But he's still, I think he'll still be a solid piece for them moving forward.
Yes.
He can be a nice,
for sure.
I think a fourth player on your championship team, I think he has that potential, and that's not bad.
So you mean like the 2018 championship Lakers team?
Yeah, that one. Yeah, that's the one. When they're going to be playing the Sixers? Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, anyway, listen, I do want to circle back around at the end. We'll talk more about like your Lakers as a whole, and mostly about that Lakers pick that I'm coveting. But we've got one more to talk about. We were going to talk about my boy, Joel Embiid. Let me just say, have you watched him play? Obviously, everyone has.
Oh, my God. Oh, yeah. He is. I got to say, like, he is so just pure fun.
Yeah.
The NBA is supposed to be fun. He is the epitome of fun. Like, just,
it's not just his. Yeah, and it's not just his playing either. It's his personality. Like, I had Spike Eskin from the Reds to Ricky Sanchez on the podcast once. And this was preseason, and he was talking about Joel Embiid wanted to be called the process. And he's like,
how amazing is that?
He's like, if you put one of the Liberty Ballers guys, and like if they developed Joel Embiid in a lab, that's what you would get. He is that guy.
It's so funny.
By the way, at the game, let me just tell you this real quick. At the game tonight in Boston, there were fans in the stands cheering "Trust the Process" at a Boston game. I'm in love.
No, I was just saying, like, if NBA Twitter collectively came together to make a basketball player, it would be Joel Embiid.
Oh yeah,
he does everything.
And you know what, did you see him playing, did you see the Sixers play the Kings the other night? This is insane too. He was playing slap ass with Boogie Cousins. It was amazing.
He despite, you know, all the injury trouble he's had, this is his rookie season. He looks so comfortable out there.
Yeah,
he does not look like a rookie.
No, and he's putting up all-star numbers, legitimately. Listen, I'm going to tell you his numbers right now, and we'll talk a little bit about his all-star bid. But 19.2 points per game, 7.3 rebounds, 2.4 blocks per game, 38% from three.
This is absurd.
This is a dude who's 7'2", 38% from three on 25 minutes a game. 25 minutes.
And And that is probably the most impressive part, right? I think with good reason, they're limiting his minutes. They're not putting too much strain on him. But Joel Embiid is like everything about a player like that. You just, you know, knock on wood every time and say, if healthy, if healthy, mm-hmm. if healthy. You look at him and you say, okay, this guy is a foundational player. And now you think about when Ben Simmons is back, and imagine a Ben Simmons, Joel Embiid pick and pop, right? And if Ben Simmons is bad at shooting, okay, that's fine. They're going to run a pick and pop where Joel Embiid is the one who's kind of pulling back.
Yeah.
And he's the guy who's shooting, and Ben Simmons is going to the hoop. Now we're talking, right? Now we're talking about this is what Sam Hinkie wanted to do. By the way, it still hurts me that Sam Hinkie didn't take Porzingis.
Oh, it hurts! It hurts you! Hurts you! You have no idea.
That's so true.
Yeah.
That's the point I wanted to get back to you at.
Go ahead.
I do think that Nerlens Noel and Embiid can coexist. I don't know why the hell you guys would trade Embiid. I don't care how unhappy these guys Okafor. Are.
All right, wait.
No, I know, but my point is that Embiid is the guy who's probably going to go based off everything I'm seeing, and because Okafor's
trade value. You're saying Noel would be the guy to go, not Embiid.
Oh shoot! Noel, right? And he's the guy. Noel is the guy who's rumored in all these trades because I think he naturally has the highest trade value out of Okafor and Noel. I'd say, you know what? Screw it. We're in the process. It's fine. If you want Jahlil Okafor, this is the price. And whenever you guys want him, you can take him. But for the time being, we're going to make Embiid and we're going to make Noel work together because Embiid has the ability, right, to shoot the threes and kind of be the outside kind of guy and the playmaker in the offense. Nerlens Noel is on a rookie contract. He's a defensive stopper. He's a really solid big man. I don't understand why you can't have him start Noel with Embiid and have, you know, Noel go to the bench early, like, you know, stagger the lineups. I don't understand why this can't work. I don't know why you would trade Noel, and they seem to be really good friends, and Jahlil Okafor doesn't seem like he has the best chemistry with the team. Just stop the charade. I don't understand.
I'm just going to say, and this is coming from a Lakers fan. You are preaching to the choir. Listen, two things that made me really happy about, even though the Sixers lost to the Celtics tonight, two things that made me really happy. They played Noel and Embiid together for a few minutes. Every time it's a very, very small sample size. But the two of them on the court together stop everyone. They have potential to be a lethal defensive combination. Joel can pass the ball to Nerlens for alley-oops. They can both cover. The other thing that's crazy about them is they're both so good at defense. They're a 6'11" and a 7'2" guy that can cover on the perimeter. Not extended minutes, but Noel is so good at jumping passing lanes and getting steals. He's the best stealing big man in the league, bar none.
If they get along, just don't break it up. Make it work.
Exactly.
What are you going to do with Okafor? Okafor is not going to be a good...
Anything.
Like, he's not
going to be anything.
It's so frustrating because it's like, there's the Laker fan aspect of me, but then the bigger fan is the NBA fan. And mm-hmm. I'm looking at the Sixers team. I'm saying, you have something here. Do not mess it up. I don't know what you're going to get for Noel. And I know it's going to be more than what you can get for Jahlil. But suck it up because you have these two guys and they want to make it work. By all accounts, they want to make it work. And Jahlil Okafor is the guy who's going to stay.
Exactly.
I know it's going to happen.
Don't say that. But I was going to say, the other thing that made me happy tonight is that Okafor did not play a single minute. I was like, listen.
Oh, that's nice.
And here's the thing.
They played Boston tough. That's a good sign.
Yeah. They lost by four, and it came down to the very last seconds. They only lost by four because they had to foul. I don't have anything against Okafor as a person. I'm sure he's a nice guy. You hear nice things about his character, right? And
nothing good comes after I'm sure he's a really nice guy.
it's like everyone who ever starts a conversation with, I don't mean to be racist about this. Let's be honest, he has some really nice post moves. Old school in the paint post moves. They're beautiful. Right. He's got a beautiful spin move, and then that's it. He's a defensive liability. Like
the thing is there is going to be a use for him, mm-hmm.
just not on this team. Exactly. His him being on the court makes everyone worse. And I'm not joking about that. The numbers are there to prove it. He doesn't fit on this team. And I have nothing against him, but I just hope they give him away for a bag of beans at this point. I do not want to watch Okafor play on this team anymore.
And me too. I think don't get like they should not. You know, the problem is this is going to be Colangelo's biggest transaction since he joined the team.
Yeah.
And that might create problems, right? That might be a situation where Colangelo's first trade is going to be Jahlil Okafor for, like, you know, I don't know, 2 second rounders.
And people are going to get upset because he gave him away for nothing. Go ahead.
I think that's probably the biggest problem. Goodness, you could have had Porzingis. I know. I know you're a Sixers fan. It probably kills you.
It kills me. Can you imagine either like last year when it would have been Noel and Porzingis? Because that is a deadly combination. All right. Or this year if it would have been Embiid and Porzingis on the court together. Yeah, exactly. What are you going to do? What are you going to do? All right. So anyway, let's, you know who could use Okafor though?
Don't you dare.
The Lakers.
Don't you dare.
Sorry.
It's funny. We still, like, after losses, you know, there's the percentage of every fan base that's just, like, you know, I don't know how better to say it. Just not smart, let's say.
Yeah. Like a percentage of our country.
Yeah, that's true. If you do Twitter searches for Jahlil Okafor, like, after Laker losses, you will still see some people saying D'Angelo Russell for Jahlil Okafor. It's still happens.
You know
Can
what?
Can you believe that?
It's funny. I really wanted them to take D'Angelo Russell at first, but the longer he's played, the more I hate him.
That's harsh.
Dude, I can't take I can't take the ice in the veins. It makes me crazy. It's like, stop it.
It's an amazing celebration.
he gloats too much, a little bit too much.
Yeah, you know, there's an element. So what he's actually received quite a bit of criticism, because even when the Lakers were playing well, he really wasn't at his at what we thought he could be.
Mm-hmm.
And he's actually been dealing with a knee issue all season, and he even sat out like 2 weeks. And the numbers bear this out. Even when his shooting hasn't been as good, and even when his like assist numbers and whatnot, whatever the metrics you want to use, are not that good.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at his on-off numbers, the offense of the Lakers is far, far worse in minutes that D'Angelo Russell's on the bench. And yeah, there are things that drive you nuts. Like, you know, there's turnovers, kind of lazy passes or too fancy passes, mm-hmm. or sometimes it looks like he's not fully engaged, or sometimes it's like he's not ramping up the intensity level to where it probably should be. There's certainly things that are troubling, but troubling in the sense that troubling today, where those are things that sometimes comes with maturity, and some guards take longer to develop on that end, but it just every metric bears it out. It's that the Lakers are a better team when D'Angelo Russell's on the floor. And there's this guy named Pete. He's on Twitter at Laker Film Room. He's doing this great. He's like an ex-coach, and he's doing these great film breakdowns. And the kinds of reads that D'Angelo Russell is making are really, really, really good. Yes, he needs to clean up the turnovers. Yes, he needs to kind of have a sustained intensity. Yes, he needs to be more of a leader. Like the Lakers have been blowing. The Lakers. This is a crazy number. Okay. The Lakers have blown 15. Games that they've had double-digit leads in 15 times this year. And it's like I don't know what it is specifically about this group, but it's almost like they're kind of Luke Walton brought in like this kumbaya kind of thing where everybody is together and we're having a good time, and that's great because that culture shift was needed.
Right.
The problem is I don't think that they have somebody who's willing to step on toes and say, get out of the effing way, you get to your corner, I'm winning this game right now, right?
Right.
And every team has that player. Every team needs that player.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is what we're going to see between somebody like D'Angelo Russell and Julius Randle. But truthfully, it has to be D'Angelo Russell, because D'Angelo Russell is a guy who kind of keeps everything moving, and he has a good jump shot, and he has a good three-point shot, and all of those things, right?
Right.
So that is the next level of his progression. And last year, for a point guard, who likes passing, who likes to be flashy, who likes to kind of improvise on the floor. Last year was the worst possible situation for him with Kobe kind of monopolizing possessions in and out of the lineup. Byron Scott, his coach, antagonizing him. So not only was that year kind of a wash in terms of developmental, it was almost a negative where Luke Walton had to dig D'Angelo Russell out of the ground first before setting him up for the next level. So it's going to take time, and we have to be patient. The Lakers, as long as it's not a situation where D'Angelo Russell, you know, I don't know. I just don't see a character issue here. And there's a, you know, the unfortunate Nick Young and all that, the Snapchat and all that. But if you look at the team and if you look at their chemistry, it's really good. Well, so it's just a matter of growth, growing pains.
Yeah, growing
That's
pains
what
for
else.
Sure.
Growing pains.
Yeah. I was going to say about D'Angelo Russell is that I think, you know, we know he has great court vision. Coming out of college, that was what he was touted for, that and his shooting ability. And I think those things still are there. I think the major thing against – there's two major things against him. One of them he will grow out, which is his – grow it out of – it's his immaturity. I think he's just a little bit immature, clearly by the ice in the veins thing.
I love that bothers
me. It bothers me so much. I don't know why.
That's enjoyable to me.
Yeah. Well, enjoy it. And the other thing that, you know, that – I think limits his ceiling a little bit is just his lateral quickness and his athletic ability. That's not true. Yeah. It's never going to be there. And that's fine. Like, he can still be a really, he could be like, look at James Harden. He's one of the best, not even point guards, but players in the league. And it's funny that we're calling him a point guard now. And he's this sort of a very similar player. I think he's a slightly bit more athletic, and he's also a lot bigger and bruising, or does that make sense? More of a bruiser.
Yeah.
And I think he's probably just a little bit smarter of a player at this point in his career too. But yeah, like, D'Angelo Russell can totally get there. Anyway,
I think that, you know, that aspect of that athleticism and that quickness, that's what's limited him with his driving ability, because he doesn't really get to the basket that well. And when he does, it's not, you know, he's not finishing strong. He's not getting to the line a lot. So I think, yes, those are absolutely areas that, it's hard to see how he gets much better. I obviously would expect improvement.
Yeah.
But he's not going to, you know, he can't change all of that.
Right. Some of it you're just born with. He's born with great court vision. And I think he'll grow into being a leader. I don't think he's ever going to grow into another set of legs that allows him to move quicker.
Right.
But anyway, what else were we going to talk about? I just wanted to bring one more thing up with you. And because I wanted to ask you about, you know, Your team has really fallen off hard lately. And I'm wondering, I just have a real quick question, because they owe their pick to the Sixers if they fall.
I'm rooting so hard for them.
You want them to keep tanking, right?
This is what I want. I want them to finish with like a bottom, let's say, 6 record and have like a 4% chance of keeping the pick, whatever the percentage is, and keeping it.
Yeah.
Like, so it's like they don't fall so far to the ground. At the same time, they keep their pick. Now, the truth is, if you look at the records of all the teams at the bottom, so we're talking about Brooklyn, we're talking about Philly, and we're talking about the Lakers, those kind of teams, right?
The Suns, Dallas. Who else is in there right now? But yeah, go on.
There is no team that is outright tanking like there was last year.
Right.
So the win totals at the bottom should be higher than they were last year. So the Lakers last year finished with 17 wins and they were second worst in the league. I think the second worst record in the league might be closer to 25 wins, which is huge. That's an 8 win difference.
I totally agree. I was thinking, and I think, and it's going to be, makes for better, enjoyable basketball, right?
Right. So if the Lakers, so my preseason prediction was 27 wins for them. And they're actually now, they went from like a 40-win pace to now they're at about a 27-win pace. 27 is exactly 1/3. So they're at about, they're exactly at 33% right now win percentage. If they finish with 27 wins, I had it projected where they were going to finish with the third worst record, with actually fourth worst. So it's going to be Brooklyn, Phoenix, exactly like it is right now. Brooklyn, Phoenix, Philadelphia, and the Lakers.
Yeah.
Now, Philly's not that bad. Philly's fun.
Philly's coming around too, as long as Okafor's on the bench.
The Suns are trying to win every night, right? They're not tanking. Brooklyn has no incentive to tank because they don't have their own pick.
Right.
Right? It's going to Boston. So there's no team at the bottom who truly is going to be out there tanking. I really think there's a chance where the Lakers look good and still finish close enough to that bottom three to keep you just so nervous on lottery night. And I can't wait.
It's going to get me so angry if they keep their pick. I'll be like, although, listen.
Remember that year Cleveland, when they got, I think, when was it the year they got Kyrie Irving? They had like a 0.9% chance of getting the number one pick, and they got it.
They got it. So 2 years in a row.
Yeah, that's the greatest of the lottery, right?
Although, you know what? They got Kyrie the 1 year, and then the next year, who'd they get?
Anthony Bennett.
Exactly. So you never know. You just never know. But
bad.
I mean, like, I say this all the time. I say this probably on every podcast. Historically, I hate the Lakers franchise. I've hated Kobe for my entire adult life.
Respect.
You know, and I was going to talk to you about this. I did mention a little bit about, we should probably wrap it up because we're like an hour here and we're all over the place, but I enjoy talking to you, so I did want to bring this up.
I'm sorry. I always go long with my answers, so I apologize.
No, it's fine. You and everyone else. I just usually don't interject as much as I do with you because I feel like I could actually talk to you, whereas everybody else, I'm just like, I'll just listen. It's fine. I was going to bring up that when we were talking about Isaiah, about how Crowder blasted the Celtics fans because they were cheering for Gordon Hayward, which is kind of deplorable to me. And that says something about also I wanted to mention this. It says something about their fan base, which I noticed tonight in the crowd view sourcing, is almost completely white. It's the whitest fan base I've ever seen. Have you noticed that? I've never noticed this before.
Oh, come on.
It's like all Irish Boston. Dudes. I know.
Boston.
Yeah.
It's not a shock to me that Boston fans are, slightly possibly racist. Come on.
Yeah.
It's Boston.
Fair. Yeah. It's fair. It's all right. Nothing against Boston as a city. They're we only.
No. I'm talking about Boston, the city. I don't know what you're talking about.
their team is, they've won too much. Both of you, Boston and the Lakers, they can, you know, no offense. It's time for some losing. I'm enjoying it. Anyway, man, we should probably wrap it up, but thank you again for coming on the show. It's always a pleasure having you on and plug your stuff again. Oh, by the way, tell me about 16 Wins a Ring. What is this?
Yeah, 16 Wins a Ring is this project started by Adam Joseph. He's a really nice guy, and he started a website, and he asked me to join on. I'm a fan of the Lakers, but when it comes to the NBA, I really like looking at kind of the organizational level. I just actually wrote a piece today about the emergence of the kind of dual coach GM role. So somebody like Mike Budenholzer in Atlanta or Doc Rivers in LA or, you know, Stan Van Gundy in Detroit. And I was kind of writing about how difficult that is. And I understand the reasons why that happens. And I understand the reasons why they're offering these guys that role, Tom Thibodeau in Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wrote about kind of the conflict. So I like looking at the game sometimes from an organizational standpoint. And so that's kind of what Adam asked me to do on occasion for 16 Wins a Ring. So it's just a collection of guys on the internet where we're posting. It's relatively new. It's doing really well. So please, check out 16 Wins a Ring. Silver screen and roll for Lakers coverage. By far the best Lakers coverage. Seriously, like the guys, you know, Harrison Fagan and Drew Garrison are kind of running the show there. Anthony Irwin is a big part of it. Those guys are amazing. So silver screen and roll. Follow me on Twitter at @DAMANR, Dumb and R. Thanks, Joe. I always appreciate it. I always have a good time.
Sure. I'm sure I'll have you on again in probably like a month. I think it's like a monthly thing, right?
That sounds good to me, man. No problem.
You're keeping my watch here. It's like, what month is it? Domin should be on. All right. Anyway, man, it's good to talk to you again. And I would say go Lakers, but that kills my soul. But go Lakers.
Go Lakers. Yeah.
All right, man. I'll talk to you soon.
Trust the process, baby.
Yeah, trust the process. Exactly. Trust the process. All right, buddy. I'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
All right, later.
Well, there you go, guys and gals and friends and companions and compadres, and I don't know what I'm saying. I hope you enjoyed the show. You know, as always, check out the show on ABPN Podcast Network. I think that's redundant. The Almighty Baller Podcast Network. You can follow at Superflight Pod. You can follow me at Joe Borelli on Twitter and email the show. Get in touch. Say hi. Send me some questions. I'd love to talk to you guys. I'd love to hear about your life because I tell you about mine all the time in the beginning of the show. Anyway, I'll see you soon. Bye-bye.